So I bet you think of a corporate whistleblower as that anonymous mailroom employee or middle management fly-on-the-wall kind of guy or gal who sees something financially wrong in his or her company and then says something until someone pays attention. And if they haven't been fired or bought off, the whistleblower is eventually seen as a hero. Well, what gets forgotten are the months, if not years, when this person is the lone voice in a corporate culture dedicated to greed and cover-up. Years of fear, vulnerability, and the potential that as a squealer, you may never get another corporate job again. Now imagine that the whistleblower is confronting one of the largest companies in the world, is from a different culture and ethnicity from the vast majority of its employees and shareholders. One more thing, the whistleblower is the CEO of the company. That is the mind-boggling true story told by the CEO of the Japanese Olympus Corporation, Michael Woodford, who took a stand against his fellow board members.
I twice reported in Europe one issue of corruption and one issue of bribery. So they knew my form. They just didn't know, this is my board colleagues, that I would find out.
That's Woodford speaking last year on The Takeaway. Michael Woodford details the entire ordeal of blowing the whistle on a multi-billion-dollar scheme of false transactions and cover-ups at Olympus in his new book, Exposure, Inside the Olympus Scandal, How I Went from CEO to Whistleblower. And he joins us now from London. Welcome back to the show, Michael.
It's good to be with you again, John.
So at the risk of, embarrassing you, forcing you to sort of congratulate yourself a little bit, you tell a story in this book that I think is absolutely meaningful, because the question we ask is, why did you do this? What is it about your upbringing that put your instinct to actually blow the whistle, to really bring down the mountain upon which you were sitting as CEO at Olympus? And you tell a story about one time actually ripping off some money from your mom, and she found out, and the experience that you had. Can you tell me that story again?
Yes, I was a teenager, and I took some money out of a purse to buy some chocolate, and when I came back, she was looking and waiting for me, and I thought she was going to murder me. She had quite a temper, but she simply told me that, she'd seen that I'd taken some money from her purse, and if she couldn't trust her own son, who could she trust in this world? And it made an impression upon me.
And you can still hear her saying that to you?
I can. But it taught me young, and it taught me a good lesson, and there's right and wrong, and you can't cheat yourself if you do bad things. In the end, you're just cheating yourself. So that's where it was laid down.
Well, this book, Exposure, gets into the real details and drama of what happened at Olympus, and I urge people to read it to get the sense of drama here. But what were the turning points for you, the really important turning points where you knew that you couldn't go along, you had to do something fundamentally different?
I mean, a lot of people look at whistleblowing you as a squealer, as a snitch, as you said before. And what I wanted to do in this book was to tell people of the challenges which you're faced, and really ask people how they would react in the same circumstances. And it's not a normal book about corporate scandal. I mean, it is like a John Grisham novel, but it's true. And the choices are very simple. And it was in August of last year when I sat down with the then chairman, Kikukawa, and his vice president, Mori, and said, are these allegations, which had been appearing in a very small Japanese magazine, were they true? And watching their evasiveness, their nervousness, their discomfiture, I realized at that point in time that there was something very bad at the top of the corporation of which I was responsible as the president.
How do you distinguish between the original decision to enter into these mergers and then the cover-up that really began to compound the problem? And, of course, you've spent 30 years at this company, right?
Yeah, 30 years. I was what's known in Japan as a salaryman, somebody who spends his working life for the same company. And in Japan, that's more important than personal fidelity, loyalty, and faithfulness to your corporation. So I was emotionally attached to the company and to a lot of people within it. So fraud happens everywhere. It happens in the United States. It happens in Britain. The difference is when it comes out in Japan, it's like Alice in Wonderland. The way the company was allowed to deny the undeniable, and the Japanese media was almost like the PR office and for Olympus was something which was shocking, that the media would be so self-censoring and subservient to powerful forces. And that's one of the problems for Japan. It hasn't got a media which is willing to confront and challenge and probe.
How difficult was it to confront and challenge and probe your Japanese colleagues as a CEO who was not Japanese at all? And it's not completely unprecedented. I mean, Howard Stringer was CEO of Sony, so it's happened before. But nevertheless, how difficult
is
that?
Howard Stringer and Carlos Ghosn were parachuted in. You know, there's only been four real presidents from overseas in Japan. I'd spent my whole life there, so I'd grown up. I knew these people. I mean, what shocked me wasn't that my colleagues acted in the way they did. Once I'd got over that they were deceitful and men who would entertain such things, it was the way the Japanese institutional shareholders reacted. A month after I was fired, the stock price had fallen 81.5%. $7 billion had been struck off the value of the company, yet the Japanese institutional shareholders would not utter one word of criticism of the incumbent board or one word of support for their ex-president who was going through purgatory. My wife was almost on the verge of a nervous breakdown, but they wouldn't support me. And that silence, that deafening silence by the institutional shareholders in Japan, in contrast to the American shareholders, tells you all what is wrong about that country's capital markets.
Are you hireable today, Michael Woodward?
I have been offered a position as a president of a Japanese corporation and also the chairmanship of a British company. So this idea that, you know, whistleblowers will never work again or it always ends in tears. Again, when you read my book, it is raw. The way people betray you, the people you trust, the way your feelings are put through the mincer, and you learn a lesson you couldn't learn in any other way. But you know, I've come out of it. I'm the businessman of the year in four newspapers, including the Financial Times and the Times of London. You know, I'm acclaimed and awarded all these things, and I it doesn't have to end in tears. You know, whistleblowers are not some species of bad people. All they're doing is telling the truth. And in you know, Occupy Wall Street and moral capitalism and these new themes which are coming to the front, I think whistleblowers now are seen to be what they are, just people trying to tell the truth.
Well done. Michael Woodford's new book, Exposure: Inside the Olympus Scandal, How I Went from CEO to Whistleblower. Thanks so much.
Yeah, happy holidays, John.
Indeed. And we're having a debate on the Takeaway website, whether college degrees are really necessary. What's the value? Sarah says on our Facebook page, my job could be performed by a trained monkey. Hopefully the degree I'm working on will be worth it. Nick wrote, HR departments have run amok requiring college degrees for everything. Soon you'll need a college education to work at Walmart. How does needing to spend 4 years and $50K make sense to get a job making $35K? A lot of skepticism out there. What do you see? What's your story? 8778 MyTake, or post a comment at thetakeaway.org. This is The Takeaway. Stay with us.